Hey there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 383. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com, stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is thisshowissogay. And of course, go on over to that Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. Well, we have had the opportunity for years on this show to extol the joys of supporting various LGBTQ projects via crowdsource funding, which has been just the best opportunity to play an active role in pushing forward the content and representation that we desperately want to see out there in this world. Earlier this year, one of the projects that I myself contributed to was called Sign, a silent short film. The 30-second teaser for the film was convincing enough for me, and I was happy to pledge my support. The film has been completed. I have watched it over and over and over again. It is quickly but unsurprisingly racking up award after award at film festivals around the world. Well, here on our show this week, we have two interviews with the men behind Sign. First up, let me introduce you to Andrew Keenan Bulger, an award-winning actor, director, author, and filmmaker. He recently starred as Jesse Tuck in Tuck Everlasting on Broadway. He created the role of Crutchy in the original Broadway cast of Newsies. He has tons of other incredible stage credits. Andrew has been on the big screen in such movies as The Rewrite and Are You Joking, and on the small screen in Nurse Jackie, Looking, One Life to Live, and more. Along with collaborator Kate Weatherhead, Andrew is the co-creator of just the brilliant web series Submissions Only, and he is the co-author of the best-selling children's series Jack and Louisa. He is now here with us. Andrew, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having me.
That was a lot.
That was a lot, yes. Thank you. Very, very generous. Thank you again so much for backing our film and for being so supportive.
Well, we have so much to talk about the film, but we have to take a step back. Actor, director, author, filmmaker, is there one title you are gravitating towards these days?
I would say maybe pillow maker, basket weaver. I don't know. What's in store?
We could just keep adding to that list. That's incredible. I will go back and redo that intro straight away.
I think it's necessary.
Yeah, I'm on it. We can't have you on the show and not talk about you being on the Broadway stage. In my head, you're never on the Broadway stage without thinking, holy cow, I'm on the Broadway stage. I'm not saying that you forget your lines or anything, but it has to be just this incredible experience each and every time.
Oh, completely. I mean, the fact that it's been such a huge part of my life, I've now spent most of my life working on Broadway. I made my debut in 1996, so for the past 20 years, it's been really incredible. You know, the theater community is, I think, just the most supportive, and I think especially as like a young kid looking for a community, I feel incredibly lucky to have found it in the Broadway community.
Nice. You know, a lot of folks turn to different texts to find the meaning of life, religious texts, whatever it might be. I'm actually one of those people, Andrew. I really do think that the meaning of life can be found in Seussical, and I'm hoping you support me in that.
Oh, geez, that's so sweet. I mean, completely. What a little sweet musical. It is one of those things that I felt really, really so lucky to have gotten to work on at a young age, and to be able to work with Lynn Ahrens and Stephen Flaherty, who are the voice of musical theater in my childhood and have only gotten better with age.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love Seussical the musical.
That was a joy for me to see that on Broadway. So enjoyable. It's to the point where when I hear the tuning of an orchestra, I always just assume that Seussical is going to start. But I realize now that other orchestras do. Exactly. Very exciting. Very exciting. Well, we have you on here this week to talk all about Sign. Can I just say, I love this film.
Oh, that makes me so happy.
I absolutely love this film. So let's go all the way back. Where did the idea for Sign come from?
You know, I think the idea came from when we were, both Adam and I, Adam Wachter, who is the screenwriter, we just had some free time and wanted to create something. And I think we were drawn to the idea of intersectionality and where, especially with gays, where that where identities sort of intersect and how to depict that. And it's something that I think is not done enough in cinema. And I was really interested in with the similarities between the deaf experience and the gay experience. Both have like fallen under historic systems of oppression, and they've been things that people have thought should be cured or fixed or treated. And yet both have created incredibly strong identities and have had such huge contributions, I think especially in the art world. And I was interested in exploring a film that looked at those similarities and differences and was able to tell a story that isn't often able to be told through art.
Yeah. As a college professor, I very much appreciate intersectionality, and I know a lot of research goes into that. My assumption is you had to do a lot of background work before even starting to put this together.
Yeah, absolutely. I think immediately, as soon as we had the idea for this, we realized that both Adam and I, who are both hearing individuals, would not be able to honestly depict this story without people from the community working on it. So right away, we were teamed up with a brilliant director named Alexandria Wales, who served as our director of ASL and culture and helped us take Adam's screenplay and come up with an entire language of it, also make sure that it was really authentic to the deaf experience. And it was also teaming with a crew of deaf people who both served as just sounding boards all throughout the process to make sure that what we were doing was that we had the agency to tell these stories. And it was one of the most rewarding experiences I've ever had as a director. And I'm so proud of what we were able to accomplish.
Oh, it's so incredible. What did you learn about yourself as a director through this project?
It was really interesting. There were a lot of challenges with this. I knew that we had a responsibility to two audiences, that we had a responsibility to a hearing audience who may not be familiar with ASL, and of course to our deaf audience. And to have to be a director, to have those two worlds in mind and make sure that neither feel like they're losing out, I think was a really interesting challenge. I think especially the practice of experiencing film is so inherently biased to a hearing audience that I knew that if we wanted to make this film that we had to find a way to level the playing field, which is ultimately, as a director, why I chose to not use subtitles, but rather to have an evocative score that helps with the storytelling for a hearing audience. This way, our deaf audience had the benefit of being able to have this love story through these two men through ASL, and our hearing audience were able to access the story through the score. In the end, I think our two audiences, like our two leads, they understand the film more fully together than they do apart.
Yeah. We should probably tell our listening audience, what is Sign all about? I forgot that part.
Oh, sure. Yeah, you may be slightly confused. Sign is a 15-minute silent film that tells the relationship between Ben, who is a hearing man, and Aaron, who is deaf. And it's told through tiny vignettes. I think there are around like 50 scenes in it. And each little vignette is only a few seconds long, and it tells the entire story of the relationship. It's really beautiful, and it features an incredible cast of both hearing actors and deaf actors. And this is a little, like, beautiful short film. I have so much trouble bragging about stuff that I do as, like, a creator, as an actor, but this is the one thing that I'm like, pretty much everyone has universally told me that it's kind of special what we were able to create. And so I'm finally coming with the ability to sort of be a little braggadocious.
Yes, we need to move you past whatever hesitation is going on there, because this is some brilliant stuff. My students struggle quite a bit, more with shorter papers than with longer papers. Does the same hold true for making a short film? I mean, you really packed a lot of content. It's so weird to even think that it is 15 minutes, because it doesn't feel 15 minutes. I feel like I'm getting the whole narrative arc in there.
Well, thank you. You know, I think the short film is a really interesting genre. I made two short films this year, both which were very different and both which I learned from each of them. And I do think that when you're accountable to tell a story in a short amount of time, that we just, as so much of this film was done in the editing process where like every, I think if we would have actually lined up all the takes that we had done, it would almost be a feature length film, but being able to tell the most story with the least amount of words ended up being our friend in this. And I ended up showing it to a bunch of people to sort of get their feedback on. And especially because it is technically, for a hearing audience, it's almost a foreign language film. So without subtitles, making sure that everyone is understanding what the story is, I think being a short film actually worked to our benefit.
Nice. Well, what is going on with the film now? You are racking up just an unbelievable amount of awards, which is so well-deserved. Yeah. How are folks going to be able to see this film?
That's a great question. Well, if anyone out there is listening, we are open for business. I would love to be able to get distribution for this. And then if you would like to see it, we do have some film festivals coming down the pike for the next few months. If you want to go to our website, Sign the Film, we'll have details about that. We update it pretty regularly. And then hopefully I would love to be able to release this to the masses. But in the meantime, check and see if maybe it's playing at a film festival near you.
All right. We can do that. We can do that. Well, we're going to have Adam on the show in a little bit. And what we thought we would do, I was telling Adam this off the air, we thought we would allow you two to play a little game real quick so that you can win some This Show Is So Gay magnets. We love doing this when there's a screenwriting team. I'm going to ask you four.
Oh, sure.
Are you ready? You're a competitive guy. You can do this, right?
Oh, the most.
Okay. Four short questions. We're calling this week's game Andrew or Adam. Those are your two choices for answers. And we're going to ask you four questions. And if Adam matches two of your four answers, you guys will win some magnets. You ready?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Okay, exciting stuff. Here we go. Question number one. Who is most likely to make the food at the craft services table, Andrew or Adam?
I would say Adam. He's a craftier individual for sure.
All right. We'll see what he says. Question number two. Who gives the best acceptance speech? You're given a lot of them. Andrew or Adam?
I mean, gosh, I love Adam, but I feel like I might have to take this one. I have a little bit more experience in public speaking, just a tiny bit.
There it is. Question number three. Who is more likely to be the car navigator when driving to a film shoot? Andrew or Adam?
Honestly, if it were up to us to guide the car, we would be so lost. I mean, I would say neither of us, but maybe, oh God, it's been so long since either of us have even driven a car. Adam, I guess.
We'll go with Adam. And lastly, who is more likely to find a non-existent flaw in the final film product, Andrew or Adam?
I mean, I really have to say it's me on this one. I feel like every time I watch it, I see some frame where I'm like, ooh, I color corrected that wrong, or like, ooh, I should crop this frame a little bit differently. I don't think I've ever been able to sit and watch it entirely and just enjoy it for what it is. So I'm going to go with myself.
All right. We have logged in those answers. We will check with Adam later to see if you win. Now, I have to tell you, because I have to be upfront with you, not the first Kenan Bolger we have had on our radio show.
Oh, I know.
We enjoy that Maggie Kenan Bolger so much, and I think that you do as well.
I mean, who could not? She's the real brains behind the Kenan Bolger operation, if you have to ask me.
Tell everybody, when she was on the show, we talked about Honest Accomplice, that whole brilliant company doing such incredible work. One of the questions we had was whether or not you were pulling your weight as a board emeritus member.
You know, well, I am the secretary of Honest Accomplice Theater, so I take copious notes. I do think this year I was able to really carry my weight as a board member. We recently launched a new web series called the Trans Literacy Project, which is an explainer series for people who are wanting to become better allies of the trans community, and it's telling trans stories by trans people. It's an incredible web series, and I was able to serve as the DP on all of the shoots. So they got some free camera time from me. I hope I am doing them proud.
This was our big question, because I am ever a fan of being the board secretary, and it's a lot of work, Andrew, and we wanted to make sure that you were pulling your weight.
Oh, man. I mean, I do sort of feel bad for them having to spell check my notes at the end of a meeting, but
Thank God for that red line under certain words. It's a good thing.
Come on.
It's a good thing. Well, what is coming up for you, sir? What are you excited about?
I'm really excited because in the end of January, the third book in my series, Jack and Louisa, hit shelves. It's, I think, my favorite one of the series. It's a really, really beautiful story and a great third book for a trilogy. So Jack and Louisa, Act 3, coming January 31st.
And you know that many of us miss submissions only more than we could possibly tell you, right?
That makes me so glad. I miss it, too.
Can we get that back?
It's the age-old question. I hope at some point it gets to come back. Again, we're open for business.
There you go.
If anyone wants to throw a production company at us to turn it into something more, we'd gladly take a seat at the table.
You won't turn it away. You won't turn it away. Well, again, the name of the film is Sign. Listeners, you can stroll on over to signthefilm.com. Just talk to me real quick about what has the reaction been like?
You know, I think it's been really great, especially... I've always wanted to make a movie for a queer audience, and I think it's probably the most personal thing I've done. Even though this isn't my story, I feel like being able to tell anything about the gay experience feels really great as an artist and something I haven't been able to do before. And the support, I think, especially from the deaf community and from the gay community has really made us know that all of the long hours that we spent on set were really worth it.
Very much so. Again, listeners, signthefilm.com. Andrew Keenan Bulger, incredible, incredible work with this film. Please keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we have our second incredible guest talking all about Sign. Let me introduce him to you. Adam Wachter is an award-winning writer, composer, lyricist, music director, arranger, orchestrator, and pianist. The premiere concert of his original music and lyrics was presented in New York at our favorite 54 Below and in Los Angeles at Rockwell Table and Stage, and his original musical Tarrytown, a modern-day adaptation of Washington Irving's The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, for which Adam wrote the music, the book, and the lyrics. It had its first public reading at the Diversionary Theater in San Diego. Adam was responsible for the arrangements and musical supervision for the long-running off-Broadway hit Old Jews Telling Jokes, which I just will say my parents love, and subsequently supervised the popular production at the Royal George Theater in Chicago, for which he also provided orchestrations. He conducted the critically lauded Unlocked at the Duke Theater on 42nd Street, and he previously provided music direction on several other off and off-Broadway productions, including Yank, In Transit, and Jason and Ben. His original children's audio musical, Denny the Dinosaur, Hear Me Roar, we should do a whole episode on that, Adam. Denny the Dinosaur, Hear Me Roar, won the 2016 Parents' Choice Award for Storytelling. He has backed up the biggest names out there in arts and culture, and now he's here with us. Adam, welcome to the show, It's So Gay.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Denny the Dinosaur, Hear Me Roar.
Yeah.
That's all I've got on that one.
It's like a 20-minute children's audio musical that I wrote with Anne-Marie Milazzo, who is a vocal arranger and composer, and it's, yeah, you can download it on iTunes, I think, or
okay,
on the website. I'm actually not sure. I know you're on Amazon. You can get it on Amazon.
Everybody go to Amazon. Denny the Dinosaur, Hear Me Roar. We have so much ground to cover, Adam. Are you ready?
Oh my God, I guess so.
We'll find out. Now, by the way, is it possible that you might have some connection, perhaps, to the locale where we record this show, Is So Gay, Cleveland, Ohio?
I do. I was born there.
See?
There you go. I was born in Cleveland at Mount Sinai, which I think no longer exists. Is that right?
I don't even know Mount Sinai, so let's say no.
No, I think Yeah, I think it's been done for like 10 years or something. But I was born there, and I lived in Shaker Heights for the first year of my life, and then I moved to Michigan.
Okay.
But I still have a lot of family in Cleveland.
Well, you'll come back and visit, and you'll say hi.
Oh, yeah. I'm there all the time.
Nice. Now, everything running through your bio, there's quite a bit of music running through your bio. At what point did you say, okay, this is just what I was meant to do. I have this music in my head. I have to get it out there to people.
Pretty recently, actually. I mean, I was always sort of writing stuff just like for fun. Like in college, my friends and I would just kind of write like parody songs and little things like that, just for cabarets and things. But I never really seriously was doing it until maybe like 8 years ago. My friend Jake Wilson started a web series called The Batteries Down, and we did 2 seasons of, I think, like 12 episodes each, maybe. And for that, I wrote a bunch of original songs and did my very first ever original scoring. And that was back in probably like 2008, I guess. So, yeah, that was really when it first started. And we had a lot of guest writers. It was a musical theater web series. It was like when YouTube was sort of just starting to be a thing. And we had a bunch of guest writers, like Tom Kitt wrote a song, and Jimmy Tesori wrote a song, Kerrigan and Loudermilk wrote a song, a bunch of musical theater writers contributed songs, and I sort of supervised the orchestrating and arranging of those, and then contributed music myself.
What would you say characterizes Adam's music? Is there some sort of theme we always look for? Is there some specific element of your music that we know, oh, that's totally Adam Wachter's music?
I think so. I think it's very melodic. I usually start with like really simple melodies. I like really simple melody ideas that are really catchy, and then I sort of like to expound on them and do variations of them, if that makes sense. I take really few notes, link them together in something that I think speaks to me melodically, and then from there I sort of rearrange and reorchestrate and attack and come at it from different ways, putting into different time signatures and different ideas. But there's usually like a theme, whether it's a song or a score, that kind of gets repeated.
Nice. Well, I mentioned it in your intro, but I will just say my parents repeatedly saw Old Jews Telling Jokes. They love
wow.
it. They love it.
Oh, that's great. I loved working on it. It was so fun to do that show. It was so fun to listen to those jokes because they never stopped being funny.
And yet, when my parents would bring the jokes home with them, they weren't as funny, and I asked them to please stop retelling them.
That's very good. I mean, the cast was really great. There were some wonderful old Jews telling those jokes, I will say, that they were pretty funny on their own. But I didn't even know any jokes before I did that show, really. I was not the kind of person that would, like, tell jokes. Like, I was maybe a little funny or witty at a party, but I was not like, hey, did you hear the one about, you know, waka, waka, waka? And then I did that show, and then I learned all these jokes. So now I just use those.
Adam is fun at parties, folks. He is fun at parties. He's got it. He's
only
got
my
it.
Kind of parties.
It's good stuff. Well, we had Andrew Keenan Bulger on earlier this show. Now, the way that he tells it is that, and we'll compare your story with his, is that you guys just kind of had some free time, and in your free time started talking about intersectionality, and thus this brilliant short film was born. I will just say separately, when I have free time, I take a nap, but you guys apparently write a film about intersectionality. So is that the way you remember it as well?
I don't remember that word specifically coming up. I think that's Andrew's word. But yeah, that's pretty accurate. We had a big chunk of time where we knew we had something coming up down the line, but I think he had Tuck Everlasting, and he was going into rehearsals for that in a couple months, and I was going to music direct a show in D.C. at the Signature Theater. And so we had this month or two, we really just had nothing to do. And we said, let's make something. What should we do? Well, let's make a short film. Okay. And then we started brainstorming from there.
And thus it was born. Now, what type of work did you have to do to write this? Because, you know, Andrew directed it, and I'm sure it played a big part in the mm-hmm. content, but your name is right there next to a screenwriter. Talk to me about what you put in to make this happen.
Well, Andrew and I started together by just discussing what the story would be and sort of brainstorming ideas for, like, what the content would be. You know, it's about these two characters, Aaron and Ben, who meet on the subway and go on a date, and it sort of tracks their whole relationship over 15 minutes, but really over the course of a year, from dating and moving in together, and a whole, you know, a whole slew of things happens. So we brainstormed what all those things would be, just kind of in broad strokes. And then I just sat down at my computer and wrote a screenplay and sent it to Andrew, and he had some edits and thoughts, and we just went back and forth. And it was a very different experience. I've written, you know, some musicals and little things like that, but this was different because, as you know, it's a silent film that's done almost exclusively in American Sign Language with no subtitles. So in terms of writing dialogue, it was certainly a challenge in that respect because I knew that the dialogue I was writing would never actually be heard, at least not in English. So I worked a lot on how do we communicate and how visually will we communicate this? What will be important to the viewer to understand when they're not getting actual words necessarily?
Yeah. The music is a character unto itself. You know, you have the actors on screen, mm-hmm. but the music is its own character in the film. My gosh, Adam, I hope that you are extraordinarily proud of the music. It is such integral and beautiful piece of the puzzle. Please tell me you feel good about what's there on the film.
I do. I feel really good. And that was certainly one of the driving forces in deciding what kind of film we would make, because I really wanted something that would showcase my music, because it is sort of my main thing that I do, and I am really proud of it. I think it comes off really well, and it was certainly a joy to make and to record with 10 really wonderful musicians in New York. Yeah, I do love the music. I will say, you know, I don't always love talking about my work in superlatives, but it is one of the better things I've done, I think.
It doesn't even sound like 10. It sounds like there are at least 40 strings on that alone.
Wow. Well, that's good. There are five. There's a string quartet and a bass.
Okay.
So five strings.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Well, one of the aspects that we haven't yet talked about is the crowdsource funding aspect of this whole thing. You all set out to raise $5,000. And let's just stop right there before we even move to the eventual result. Every time I have a conversation with one of our guests about crowdsource funding, there's always this similar sentiment expressed of, I think we can do it, but we can't be totally positive that we will raise the amount that we want. Is that what you guys were feeling as well?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we were really lucky in that we shot the film first before any crowdsourcing. Andrew owned a camera, and we weren't using sound, so we didn't need any sound equipment, and all the actors volunteered their time, and all the crew volunteered their time, and the interpreters even. So we already had the film in the can before we did any crowdsourcing. We shot it completely for free. I think the only thing we spent money on were like some sandwiches one day for the cast and crew because we were running so long. So that was really it. So we had this movie already, and Andrew was going to edit it himself, and I was going to score it. So we didn't have these expenses, which was a great way to make a film without worrying about any expenses. And then for post-production is when we really decided we needed to find some money, because I wanted to record the score in a certain way in a real recording studio and not use just synths and things that I had done for scoring in the past. I wanted real musicians and a real studio, and we really wanted some professional color correction done. And that's when we said, okay, let's get some money.
Okay. Now, I don't know if you know this, Adam, mm-hmm. but you didn't just raise $5,000. You didn't raise raise 100% of your goal. You actually raised 253% of your goal for a total of $12,652. And by the way, this is an important piece too. So $12,652, incredible, wonderful. But I also love the fact that it was backed by 185 different people, and there's no way that you knew all of those people.
Oh, no, I don't think I knew any of those people, maybe like two or three.
Yeah.
It was really amazing, and it was very moving, how many people supported it. We made a video in the park one day, me and Andrew in Alexandria, Wales, who was our ASL master and director of deaf culture for the film. We made a video and put it out there saying we're trying to raise this money on Indiegogo, and people were so generous. It was really incredible. We didn't even have any like great rewards, honestly. The rewards were like, you get to see the movie. You know, yeah. We didn't have t-shirts or anything to give away. And people were really generous and really eager to help. A lot of people in the deaf community and a lot of people in the gay community both sort of came together to help fund this little thing without even seeing it first, which I thought was just really incredible and sort of speaks to the sort of film audience at large wanting films like this that address issues that aren't typically seen in film in general and gay film in particular.
I'm just realizing this might be one of the first times I have supported a project through crowdsource funding without getting the t-shirt or the mug, and yet I feel okay about it.
Thank you. We really appreciate it. Good. I'm glad you do. If we ever made a t-shirt, we would send you one.
Okay.
But we don't have any t-shirts. I mean, it's a 15-minute film. What do you need a t-shirt for?
I don't want the t-shirt. I wouldn't mind the mug, but that's fine. Right. That's fine. It's all good.
If we ever make a mug, we're fine. You'll be the first to get
some. Okay. And you understand that that has now been said on the air, and I'm holding you to that. Okay.
It's been said on the air. It is a binding promise.
It is. It is. It is here in this show. It's so gay. Now, another wonderful aspect of all this. Now, we don't make art to win awards, obviously. Maybe. Who knows?
Oh, no.
But the recognition at all of these different film festivals, I would have to imagine that's just been incredible.
That has been the real icing on the cake. I mean, if the cake is to make the film itself and the experience we had making it, the icing has been the crazy reception that we received, which we really did not factor in at any point while making this. This was not something we did for awards or even to go to any festivals. We wanted to make this just as a calling card for ourselves. I wanted to show this and say, you know, look what I can do with my music. And he wanted to say, look what I've done with my directing. And then when we received so much extra money in the campaign, that was really the only reason that we even submitted to as many festivals as we did, because we could afford the entry fees. Before that, we really didn't have a plan to do that. So once we had that money and we could afford entry fees, we submitted it to a lot of festivals, and a lot of them, mostly gay film festivals, I would say, were really receptive to the film, and we did get a lot of awards, which was really nice. And was really great was that we got to attend a lot of the festivals. Andrew attended a lot here, and I did a big Europe trip, actually, with my miles that I had gotten from my credit card. I booked myself a ticket to Europe and got to go to 4 different festivals over there in 1 2-week trip, and that was really incredible.
It begs the question, I have to assume that the plan is to be here at the Cleveland Film Festival.
We have submitted.
Okay.
And we have not yet heard if we will get in.
Okay.
Hopefully, fingers crossed, because if we do, we would love to come.
Fingers crossed. I don't care about that. I'm making some calls. Let's get this going here, man.
Yeah, you make some calls. You get us in there.
Oh, such wonderful stuff. Well, we played a game earlier with Andrew. We asked Andrew 4 questions, and we decided that if you get 2 of the 4 questions, if you match up with Andrew Keen and Bulger on 2 of the 4 questions, we will send you guys some This Show Is So Gay magnets. Not as good as Sign the Movie mugs, but still pretty darn good.
Right. Well, at least they exist.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So this game this week, we are calling Andrew or Adam. The answer to each question is either Andrew or Adam. Now, you have a little bit of a trickier task than the person who usually provides the answer first, because you might not necessarily be providing the correct answer, Adam. You just have to provide the answer you think Andrew gave. You ready to go?
Oh, God. You know, I haven't seen Andrew in like 2 months because I've been in L.A. and he was in the Philippines. This is going to be...
I believe in you.
Okay.
I believe in you. Here we go. Question number 1. Who is most likely to make the food at the craft services table, Andrew or Adam? What do you think Andrew said?
Andrew.
Unfortunately, that was not the correct answer. He said Adam.
Really?
Yes.
No, he knows that I can't cook at all, and he cooks all the time.
He sees you as being very crafty.
I'm crafty, but not with food.
Well, this is why we do this game. I still think you're going to win. You're gonna be fine.
God.
You're going to be fine.
Okay.
Here we go. Question number two. You're in it to win it. Here we go. Yeah. Question number two. Yeah. Who gives the best acceptance speech, Andrew or Adam?
Andrew, definitely.
He said Andrew. That is the correct answer. There we go. One down. Yeah. One to go. Here we go.
Yeah.
Question okay. number three. And by the way, he wanted the answer to question number three to be neither, but he had to pick one. So I'm just putting that down right now.
Okay.
Question number three.
Okay.
Who is more likely to be the car navigator when driving to a film shoot, Andrew or Adam?
Adam.
That is the correct answer. Well done. Well done. Let's see if we can get...
I can't believe he wanted to say neither.
I think you guys might need to bond a little more because there's some stuff that you don't know about each other, apparently.
Well, we've only attended a film festival together one time, and that was in New Jersey, and we took a train.
There it is. That's my homeland of New Jersey. Mm-hmm. It's the only way to get there is by train. Here we go. Let's do question number four to see if you can get 3 out of 4. Who is more likely to find a non-existent flaw in the final film product, Andrew or Adam?
I would say me, Adam.
He said Andrew.
He did?
He said he's very critical.
Oh, my God. I would say we're both very critical.
We're both very critical. The important thing is, Adam, you won the game and you won some swag for the two of
Hooray!
You. You had the harder task. So there you go. Well, what is coming up next for Sign the Movie? Are you headed to some more film festivals coming up?
I don't know. We've submitted to more. I don't think there are any on the schedule as of right now. But we're waiting to hear back from some more.
Nice.
So yeah, hopefully there will be some more to come on that. And you never know. We might try to do something else with it that I don't know if I'm really supposed to talk about, but you don't know. I mean, it's not over, I'll say that.
Okay.
I hope it's not over because we had such a good time making it, and you know, we stayed very close with the cast, and it was really just a dream, because in terms of projects that we've done, I think in our careers, it was definitely one of the highlights, if not the highlight.
Wonderful. What's coming up next for you?
Yeah. Well, I have just this week finished a run music directing a show called Merrily We Roll Along in Beverly Hills at the Wallace Annenberg Center. So that just ended.
That's the one that goes backwards, right?
That's the one that goes backwards.
Okay.
Exactly. That's the tricky one. Yeah, yeah. But it was really a great time, and it's a beautiful score. So it was a pleasure to work on. And yeah, now I'll go back to New York, and I don't know. I don't know what I'll do. I'm writing away, so hopefully I'll finish something and make the next one, I guess.
Look, I don't mm-hmm. need to tell you this because I think you already have a sense of how good this content is. As I said earlier in the show, I don't know that I've ever just supported a film really having seen just 30 seconds of it and to folks who I'm not necessarily connected with. And I'm so happy that I did. I've watched it probably 4 times at this point, a couple times with my partner.
Wow.
We enjoy it so much. And you just, at the end of the day, have to be so proud of this content. It's not only entertaining and moving, but it's also important content, and we don't always get mm-hmm. to say that. And so it's just so well done, and you and Andrew should be so proud, and everybody who worked on the film.
Well, thank you. We are, and we're really glad that you're enjoying it, and I hope more people get to see it.
Again, listeners, signthefilm.com. Adam, please keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you. I will try.
Just to
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, yeah, how could I not play a little George Michael on this week's episode? What just a nutty end to 2016 with all of these heroes passing away. I hate it. I absolutely hate it. George Michael, huge hero of mine. That Freedom 90 video was everything for me. That was artistry, and that song is just one of my favorite songs of all time. Just incredible, incredible stuff. If you've not seen Noah Michelson, the editor of the Huffington Post Queer Voices section, he had a piece out this week called, I can't say all of this, but George Michael was a filthy gay effer, and we should honor him for that. And it's all about not sanitizing people's past. And it's really quite an incredible piece. Again, George Michael was a filthy gay. I'm sure if you just search for George Michael was a filthy gay, it will pop up. But it's George Michael was a filthy gay effer. Can't say that word. And we should honor him for that. Really incredible stuff there. The subheader is, we could all learn a lot from his unapologetic approach to his sexuality. So, George Michael passing away this week, Carrie Fisher passing away this week. What an icon. What an absolute icon. And not just about her work on the film, and of course, obviously, Star Wars. And we could talk about Star Wars until the end of this episode and for 80, 90 episodes after this. Actually, I think there are whole podcasts that just talk about Star Wars, but also other films as well. Soap Dish is one of my favorite films of all time. I would say in my top three films of all time, Soap Dish, top three films. Just incredible writing, and Carrie Fisher, so funny in that film. She's incredible. So, and also an icon off the screen, the work that she did to talk about mental health, to address that stigma head on. And we just don't talk about mental health nearly enough. And Carrie Fisher said, no, this is part of my life. And if you're going to talk about me, you're going to talk about mental health. Just incredible work on film, off film. Carrie Fisher passing away. Zsa Zsa Gabor. We haven't even talked about Zsa Zsa Gabor. She passed away, gosh, it was only like a week and a half ago, but it seems so dwarfed by all of the recent news. And I hate highlighting that 2016 is not yet over, but let's just say that we're done. Can we just say that we're done, folks? No more celebrity passings in 2016. That would be a great thing. Now, I know I'm anticipating some emails before they come in because, you know, I've been doing this show for 8 years, so I kind of know what you guys are going to say sometimes before it comes in. Why would you highlight a film that we can't see right now? And I agree, you should learn all about signthefilm.com and just learn all about the incredible work that we've been talking about all episode long. But yeah, I wish you guys could all see it. I want you to be able to see it, but I also want to take the time so that you all know there are people doing incredible work out there. And this is what it takes. There's crowdsource funding that has to happen. Just because people create incredible content doesn't mean that we automatically get to see it. So hopefully they can find a distribution deal and everyone can check out Sign the Film. But in the interim, signthefilm.com. Now, some time left on this week's episode, so let's, of course, get to all the latest LGBT news that's out there. I said on last week's episode, I'm sure this will change because I don't know what the full story is before we went to air, and of course it did change. The North Carolina State Legislature, they ended their special session last week without accomplishing their promised goal, and that promised goal was the repeal of House Bill number 2. That would be House Bill 2, the anti-LGBT bill. Governor Pat McCrory had called the special session for lawmakers to vote on a repeal after the Charlotte City Council agreed to repeal its LGBT-inclusive public accommodations ordinance, right? And so this was a quid pro quo deal. If the Charlotte City Council repealed their LGBT-inclusive public accommodation ordinance, well, then the North Carolina State Legislature was to repeal House Bill 2. Well, that didn't happen. The Charlotte City Council did indeed repeal their LGBT-inclusive public accommodations ordinance, But yeah, the Senate then voted down a repeal bill, and the House adjourned without ever taking a vote. Both chambers have a Republican majority, which is important that you know that. The Senate rejected the repeal measure by a vote of 32-16, then adjourned without taking up a related one that would have placed a six-month moratorium on municipalities enacting non-discrimination ordinances that cover sexual orientation or gender identity. The House had already adjourned. That leaves in place House Bill 2, which, among other provisions, prevents cities from enacting or enforcing LGBT-inclusive non-discrimination ordinances and prevents transgender people from using the restrooms, locker rooms, and other single-sex facilities that correspond with their gender identity if those facilities are located in government buildings. It has resulted in nationwide public outcry, and the effects are still being seen. I mean, they have lost billions of dollars in tourism revenue, in conferences, in various organizations saying, okay, well, then we're not doing business with you anymore. Well, another organization has now just joined the fold. The North Carolina branch of the NAACP will join the growing boycott of the state after this attempt at repealing House Bill 2 was defeated. Just unbelievable. They're losing even more money. Losing even more money. Speaking at a news conference, North Carolina NAACP President William Barber called for an economic boycott until HB 2 and anti-democratic measures in the state are repealed. The group said it would begin the process of making it official NAACP policy. In a statement, the North Carolina NAACP said this, quote, House Bill 2 is anti-civil rights and anti-LGBTQ hate-filled legislation. House Bill 2 should have been repealed in its entirety this week, as promised by the leadership of North Carolina General Assembly. Our elected officials should have worked to protect all the people of North Carolina, but instead they wasted our time and tax money. Both the House and the Senate's all-white Republican caucus have proven that they are not fit to govern North Carolina. The legislature adjourned without repealing House Bill 2 because they could not bring themselves to protect living wages and the civil rights of the LGBTQ community. This is shameful and a disgrace to North Carolina. The majority of the Republican extremists can only seem to get together when they are passing unconstitutional laws that hurt the poor, African Americans, minorities, women, immigrants, public education, the environment, and the LGBTQ community. Today is proof they are totally dysfunctional. That's the NAACP joining the North Carolina boycott. That stinks for everyone in North Carolina. They need these tourism monies. There are many LGBTQ-owned businesses there, allied-owned businesses there, and they will be hurt by this. Just a shame. Just a shame. YouTube star and LGBT activist Tyler Oakley has hit the nail on the head about why we should be anxious for the Trump presidency. Talking to one publication, Oakley explained the reality of being a visible member of the LGBT community and what is in store for the future of LGBT rights under Trump's power. He said this, quote, I'm absolutely concerned, and every single person in this country should be. If you know an LGBTQ person, if you know a person of color, if you know a woman, if you know anyone who isn't straight, white, cisgender, Christian male, you should be concerned. Trump's actions speak louder than words, and his appointments send a clear message to minorities. We are not here to protect you. The only bright spot that I see is the maps of voting results in America for the youngest voters. They are our future, and they voted overwhelmingly for inclusion, love, hope, and equality. That's our future. It's Tyler Oakley. Gosh, he was on our show years ago. That's when we were still back in Vermont, so that's at least 3.5-4 years ago, and he's really using his voice to make a difference, which I appreciate. We always have to keep an eye out for individuals who can reach segments of the population that other people can't reach. Yes, Human Rights Campaign, you reach one section of the community, but you don't necessarily reach young voters. And Tyler Oakley reaches young voters. And so I applaud him for using his voice in this way. Really great work there. The National Women's Hockey League has pledged to protect transgender players following the recruitment of the first ever transgender pro athlete. A policy of inclusion for trans players was introduced by the league after the athlete, Harrison Brown, was put under scrutiny for his gender identity. The policy states that, quote, people designated female at birth, regardless of their gender identity, are allowed on the women's team. The league supports athletes choosing to express their gender beyond the binary of female and male. The National Women's Hockey League based the policy on the International Olympic Committee's guidelines, which also specifies that trans people do not require surgery to compete on the team of the gender they identify with. Brown made his debut as a trans player when he scored a goal, and the announcer said his name across the loudspeaker. He planned to medically transition after finishing college, but put off the decision when the National Women's Hockey League was created. Brown has postponed his full transition until he's finished playing in the league and is yet to change his name legally because of issues surrounding visas. So the National Women's Hockey League taking action. There will be so many young folks who see this and see, oh my gosh, another opportunity for me, an opportunity that I thought was barred to me because of my identity. No, I can do this now. That's the importance of these stories. I get people who write sometimes some not very nice emails, but if you guys have anything to write, send it on over. Ken@thisshowisogay.com. I take any and all feedback. I try to respond to everything. But people write in and say, this doesn't affect my life. Okay, cool. Then the story's not for you. But you don't actually get to hear some of these stories and find out about this news and say, it doesn't affect me. We shouldn't even be talking about this. No, because it does affect other people. There are other experiences out there. So kudos to the National Women's Hockey League. Another trans story, this one not great. An 8-year-old boy has been banned from the U.S. Cub Scouts because he is transgender. Joe Maldonado, 8 years old, had joined his local Scouts group about a month ago. According to his mother, his trans status was no secret when he joined. However, after a month of participating in the kids' club, he has been told not to return. An official from the Northern New Jersey Council Boy Scouts informed Christy Maldonado, the boy's mother, that her son wasn't welcome back. Oh, I hate this. She related to the media, not one of the kids said, you don't belong here. Her son said this, quote, it made me mad. I had a sad face, but I wasn't crying. I'm way more angry than sad. My identity is a boy. If I was them, I would let every person in the world go in. It's right to do. So there you go. The Cub Scouts. A lot of work needs to be done on the Cub Scouts. I'm surprised I did not hear about this story from my parents. Anytime there's a story that happens in northern New Jersey where my parents live, I usually find out about it. Come on, Mom and Dad. You're supposed to be letting me know these things before other people tell me. They got to get on it. I know, folks. Big development over across the pond in England. The Queen's cousin has become the first member of the British royal family to come out of the closet. Lord Ivar Mountbatten has revealed that he is now dating a man after a lifelong struggle with his sexuality. Mountbatten is the Queen's cousin, the great-great-great-grandson of Queen Victoria, and the great-nephew of Earl Mountbatten of Burma. I'm pretty sure I am struggling with all these names, and I'm just mangling them. The 53-year-old came out in an interview with his boyfriend, James Coyle. The couple met on a skiing holiday in March, and the relationship has been a key landmark for them both. He is the first member of the extended royal family to come out as gay, and while he is happier now, he's still finding his feet in his new relationship. He said this, quote, I am a lot happier now, though I am still not 100% comfortable with being gay. Being a Mountbatten was never the problem. It was the generation into which I was born. When I was growing up, it was known as the love that dare not speak its name. But what's amazing now is how far we have all come in terms of acceptance. Coming out is such a funny phrase, but it's what I suppose I did in a rather roundabout way, emerging to a place I'm happy to be. I have struggled with my sexuality, and in some ways I still do. It has been a real journey to reach this point. Simply talking about it in public is a huge step for me. Up to this point, I've had a heterosexual lifestyle, so living with a man is really new, one step at a time. There you go. The first out member of the royal family. Now, I don't know that children across the world are saying, okay, look at that. Now, that is also an option that's open to me, because I'm pretty sure you can't just become a member of the royal family. That's something you need to be born into. That's not how we're governed here in the States, I know, but I'm feeling pretty confident on that one. So, Eric Fanning, the first gay man appointed to head the U.S. Army, is set to be replaced. When Trump comes in, a lot of people are going to be replaced. Well, one of them is Eric Fanning, the first gay man appointed to head the U.S. Army. He's going to be replaced with a billionaire hockey club owner. Obama nominee Eric Fanning only became the United States Secretary of the Army in May of this year, making history as the first out man to head a military branch. The appointment came less than 5 years on from Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which, as we all know, had previously banned openly gay people from serving in the military, but now is a thing of the past, yet another accomplishment under the Obama administration. Fanning has more than a decade of experience holding Army, Navy, and Air Force positions in the Department of Defense, serving in a number of high-ranking roles before his current high-profile assignment. However, it was confirmed this week that he will not be asked to stay on by the Trump administration, with the president-elect opting to appoint billionaire businessman Vincent Viola as his replacement. Viola is the owner of the Florida Panthers hockey team, and he served in the Army 40 years ago in the 1970s. The hockey club owner made his billions through market trading company Virtu Financial and is the former chairman of the New York Mercantile Exchange. So Trump has said, as he has said about many people, he has the right temperament for the job. So we can't begrudge President-elect Donald Trump that. We pretty much knew all these folks were going to get replaced. But I'm sorry, Eric Fanning, I wish you had served longer, but you still made history as the first gay man appointed to head the U.S. Army. So kudos to Eric Fanning. That's pretty much it for this week's episode, everybody. We are starting to book new people for 2017. So if you have any ideas whatsoever for possible guests, please send an email on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com. We are tweeting more and more. We're kind of proud of that. Kind of into Twitter now. I previously hated it. Now I don't hate it as much. So the handle is This Show Is So Gay. So if you're on Twitter, please follow us there. This Show Is So Gay. Odds are we're probably going to follow you back. And so if you have any guest ideas, you can tell us there. And of course, go to that Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, and like us over there. Because as we say on every single episode, we sure as heck like you. I urge you to go watch Star Wars. Please, please go watch Soap Dish. Just pump your fist in the air every time Carrie Fisher comes on the screen. Go put in George Michael. You got to play some George Michael right now. I've been playing George Michael pretty much nonstop in the past couple days, so you should go do the same thing. Incredible music there. A hero of mine. Again, that Freedom 90 video. Holy cow. That is an incredible video. So a big deal there. But if you're not going to do those things, go do whatever it is that you do to use your voice to go make a difference for your LGBTQ and ally brothers and sisters. And while you're out there using your voice, while you're out there making a difference, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?